Hello, my name is David Emery, and this is For the Record program number 355, titled The Ties That Bind, Part 3. This broadcast is being recorded on April 14th of the year 2002. We're going to begin this broadcast with an excerpt of an article that I'm going to read into the record in its entirety and For the Record program number 356. This article is entitled The Swastika and the Crescent. It was authored by Martin A. Lee, the author of the vitally important recent book, The Beast Reawakens, that we've used many times on this broadcast. I've interviewed Martin Lee a number of different times about his book. This article was published in the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Report, their issue number 105 from the spring of 2002. You can visit their website at www.splcenter.org, one word. We're going to begin our discussion of the ties that bind by reading a couple of paragraphs that begin Martin Lee's article. Again, the article, The Swastika and the Crescent, subtitled, In the Wake of September 11th, New Light is Thrown on the International Ties Increasingly Linking Muslim and Neo-Nazi Extremists. This is authored again by Martin A. Lee. Notice here the vision of Adolf Hitler as the Third Reich was facing military defeat. And as Martin Lee notes quite appropriately, coordinate this or mesh this psychologically with what people saw on September 11th. As Germany's defeat loomed during the final months of World War II, Adolf Hitler increasingly lapsed into delusional fits of fantasy. Albert Speer, parenthetically Hitler's architect, later Minister of Defense, in his prison writings, recounts an episode in which a maniacal Hitler pictured for himself and for us the destruction of New York in a hurricane of fire, unquote. The Nazi Führer described skyscrapers turning into gigantic burning torches, collapsing one upon another, the glow of the exploding city illuminating the dark sky, unquote. An approximation of Hitler's hellish vision came true on September 11th when terrorists destroyed the Twin Towers in New York, killing nearly 3,000 people. But it was not Nazis or even neo-Nazis who carried out the attack. The deadliest terror strike in history allegedly came at the hands of foreign Muslim extremists. By the way, I would note that as Martin Lee goes on to describe in considerable detail, there are very strong connections between these. I have talked about those connections many times in many broadcasts. We will be talking about those to a certain extent later on in this program, and we will come back to them in future broadcasts. That article, again, The Swastika and the Crescent by Martin A. Lee in the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Report, issue number 105, the spring of 2002. Now, in connection with the Islamo-fascist slash neo-Nazi connection, and in fact, the Islamic Nazi connection. This should not be misunderstood as characterizing Islam as either fascist or Nazi, but there is a very strong connection between powerful elements within Islam and fascism, past and present. And some of those connections, such as Youssef Nada, are ongoing. We're going to take a look now at an article that appeared in the Wall Street Journal this past week being Thursday, April 11th of 2002. This is an article by Michael M. Phillips and Ian Johnson. It's titled, U.S.-European Divisions Hinder Drive to Block Terrorists' Assets. And this alludes to some of the financial fronts that were apparently utilized in September 11th and a disagreement between Europe and the United States over some of the freezing of some of the assets. The article is Dateline Paris, and it reads in part, The U.S. drive to separate terrorists from their money is hitting roadblocks amid an international dispute over whether America is too heavy-handed or Europe is too timid. 7 months after President Bush vowed to, quote, starve the terrorists of funding, unquote, American officials are complaining that allies have contributed few names to a list of 192 alleged terrorist financiers whose assets the U.S. wants frozen and haven't moved against everybody on that list. Some Europeans counter that the U.S. hasn't provided enough evidence to back up its requests, and isn't doing enough to crack down on offshore tax havens that can provide cover to terrorists. Neither Germany nor France has contributed any names to the list, which the U.S. initiated, of accounts to be frozen. Some other European countries' contributions seem aimed chiefly at local problems. Spain has added 21 names, all alleged extremists from its restive Basque region. Britain has contributed 6, all allegedly involved in violence in Northern Ireland. By the way, I would add that a subsidiary of Mercy International, in turn a derivative of Al-Taqwa, which we're going to talk about some more in a moment, has been alleged by British intelligence to be involved in funding an offshoot of the IRA, or perhaps an agent provocateur of Northern Irish Protestant group. Continuing. The U.S. Treasury Department says Germany and France, the latter with especially strong Arab ties, have each ordered banks to block accounts of just 140 of the 192 people and entities on the list. That leaves untouched, for instance, any accounts of several organizations allegedly tied to Hamas, the Palestinian group that has taken responsibility for many suicide bombings in Israel. Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill is currently on a European trip to talk about terrorist finance, a trip with an unstated purpose, to prevent the global crackdown from losing steam. Some European officials, for their part, question whether the U.S. is doing enough on its end, either to chase down its own difficult money trail, such as offshore tax havens, or to provide enough evidence to give European and Arab countries justification to act. Germans complain that the U.S. has been unwilling to share the most useful terror-related intelligence, quote, "We don't feel that we're getting everything from the American side," unquote, said a German intelligence official, again quoting, "Intelligence sharing should be mutual, but we seem to be giving and only getting very basic things in return," unquote. Well, veteran listeners to this program can no doubt see some of the problems inherent in this discrepancy between the European and American attitudes toward terrorist funding. In the background of many of these terrorist or alleged terrorist funding conduits is, of course, what I call the economic component of the underground Reich, the Bormann Organization, something which will appear to be fictitious to many people, but due to the remarkable work of Paul Manning, who was part of Edward R. Murrow's team in Europe during World War II, he broadcast the surrenders of both Japan and Germany on the CBS radio network, and served as a gunner on board both B-17s and B-29s in order to cover the air raids into both Europe and Japan in World War II. One of the most heroic and one of the best journalists we have ever produced, Paul Manning did a landmark book called Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile that we're going to access later. And in discussing the Bormann Organization, the greatest concentration of economic power under a single control in world history, as one banker described it, Paul Manning discussed this consummately powerful organization, very secretive, which has profound connections in the United States, including and especially to the Bush administration, and very profound connections in Europe as well. As I've discussed in many broadcasts, there appear to be some very firm connections between the Bormann Organization and the events of September 11th, both in terms of the stock speculation that took place prior to September 11th and in terms of the actual funding of some of the September 11th events. One of the institutions that we've discussed in connection with international fascism, Islamofascism, the Bormann Organization, and September 11th, and that is an organization called Al-Taqwa, which means fear of God in Arabic. Al-Taqwa eventually metamorphosed into Nada Management. Its founder, Youssef Nada, was allegedly involved with German intelligence as far back as World War II. Al-Taqwa is alleged by American officials to have been involved not only with September 11th, but to have been involved with Osama bin Laden and Al-Taqwa even after September 11th. I would note that Altaqua was also alleged in an article that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle on March 12th of this year to have been founded by François Genoux, a very, very important and very mysterious individual who was involved with many of the Third Reich's activities, not only in its above-ground phase, but in its post-World War II below-ground phase. He was also described by many as allocating a key portion of the Nazi funds after World War II. All of the dispensation of the Nazi funds was controlled and controlled very tightly by the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization. And the head of that organization, Martin Bormann, Hitler's right-hand man and the organizational genius behind Hitler. Anyone who differed with Martin Bormann's views was dealt with by Heinrich Müller, the head of the Gestapo and the deadly SS organization, which he had underneath him. Müller and his SS intelligence outfit described by many as the most effective intelligence outfit in the world, although something most people do not know about. That's discussed, by the way, in For the Record 283. Now, vis-a-vis Altaqua, vis-a-vis the Bin Laden outfit in Europe, the parent organization is called SICOS, the Saudi Investment Company. We're going to take a look at Yaslam Bin Laden. We're going to take a look at a French and Swiss investigation of Yaslam Bin Laden, the half-brother of Osama Bin Laden. And bear in mind that the co-chairman of Yaslam Bin Laden's organization in Europe, SICO, is a fellow named Baudin Dunant. And Baudin Dunant, as we looked at last week, is co-chairman of the board of SICO. Research credit on the following article goes to a member of the listening audience who's been tremendously helpful in recent weeks. This article is from Newsweek's issue of April 8th of 2002, and this is authored by Mark Hosenball of Newsweek, H-O-S-E-N-B-A-L-L. It was Hosenball who authored the very important article that we dealt with in For the Record 352 about Altaqua and Ahmed Huber. This article was co-authored by Peg Tyre, T-Y-R-E, and Allison Langley. It's headlined, Bin Laden, a Half-Brother Under Scrutiny. The article reads as follows. Osama bin Laden's legion of half-brothers and sisters insist that they turned their backs on their radical sibling years ago after he refused to stop his militant agitation against the Saudi royal family. By the way, I would interrupt that there is abundant evidence to the contrary. The landmark book Dollars for Terror by Richard LaBeviere is one of the sources that we've accessed, which presents information to the contrary, shall we say. And a number of information sources, including Weltwoche, a Swiss weekly, and also the FAZ, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, arguably Germany's most respected daily, have presented viewpoints that differ radically with the assertion here by the bin Laden family. Continuing. But investigators in Europe are raising new questions about the financial dealings of one of Osama's best-known relatives. No charges have been filed anywhere, but after receiving a formal request from the French government, authorities in Switzerland last week raided 13 addresses that they believe are connected to bin Laden half-brother Yaslam bin Laden. Like the rest of Osama's relatives, Yaslam adopted a different family name to distance himself from his infamous kin. Yaslam's Swiss attorney says the raids will ultimately prove his client's innocence. Yaslam manages large bin Laden family investments in Europe and is a longtime Swiss resident. A colorful entrepreneur whose interests include a jet charter business, Yaslam, before September 11th, announced plans to market a bin Laden clothing line. After September 11th, Yaslam condemned the attacks and said he had not been in contact with Osama for 20 years. He threatened to sue anyone alleging that he was involved with terrorists. But French investigators are now taking another look. According to law enforcement sources, French government money laundering experts last year ran across what they considered a series of suspicious financial transactions involving obscure companies connected to Yaslam. By the way, I would interject that in a very important article in the April-May issue of Hit List magazine, a music publication, Kevin Coogan, in an article about Ahmed Huber and Al-Taqwa, discussed the viewpoint of Ernest Backes, B-A-C-K-E-S, a European expert on money laundering, that, in the opinion of Backes, the September 11th money trails would go back to a series of organizations set up by François Janoux, again, one of the most important post-war operatives of the Underground Reich, an individual involved with the post-war disbursement of Nazi funds that inevitably as part of the Bormann organization, and an individual alleged in a San Francisco Chronicle article to have been involved with the setting up of Al-Taqwa, and an individual who was represented in 1983 by Baudin Dunant, the co-chairman of the board of SECO, the Bin Laden European Organization, that headed up here by Yaslam Bin Laden. Continuing. The experts alerted judicial authorities and a French magistrate was assigned to investigate. 10 days ago, French police searched a Bin Laden family villa near Cannes. The French also asked the Swiss to raid addresses linked to Saudi investment company, a Bin Laden family investment vehicle headed by Yaslam. U.S. officials say French investigators are pursuing a possible money laundering and tax fraud case against Yaslam. An American source says that the French also are looking for any evidence of cash flow to Al-Qaeda, but so far have not found it. Yaslam strongly denies any ties to Osama. Quote, if the authorities want to look at his companies and his finances, Yaslam says they're welcome to them, unquote, says his American lawyer Lawrence Schoenbach. He has nothing to hide, unquote. Yaslam Bin Laden is not the only sibling of Osama's to come under the attention of investigators. Authorities are closely examining a lawsuit in which another Bin Laden brother, Ghalib Mohammed Bin Laden, unsuccessfully sued the Bahamas-registered Al-Taqwa Bank for $2.4 million. U.S. officials say the now-defunct bank was part of an international financial network, also based in Switzerland, that allegedly laundered money to an assortment of terrorist groups. The U.S. Treasury told Congress that Al-Taqwa provided financial support for Osama both before and after September 11th. Al-Taqwa officials deny any connection to terrorists, and some European investigators believe that Ghalib sued Al-Taqwa to help the family distance itself from Osama. Continuing. The family has said its dealings with Al-Taqwa can't, quote, be imputed to connote any hint of support for Osama. The family has repeatedly stated that Osama was ostracized and cut off from family contact and support nearly 8 years ago, unquote. By the way, again, I would add that contradicts the findings of many institutions, including the Wall Street Journal, which noted that one of Osama bin Laden's sons is heavily involved with the management of the bin Laden companies. Now, note the Yaslam bin Laden denunciation of his alleged involvement with terrorism. I would note that Yaslam bin Laden has blocked the publication in Switzerland of a French book that we've discussed in, for the record, 334, 337, or for the record, 337, and for the record, 349. That book is called Bin Laden, La Vérité Interdite. It was co-authored by two French authors, and it carried the allegation by the late John O'Neill, who was in charge of the Bin Laden investigation for the FBI, who then quit the FBI over his frustration with, as he put it, American corporate connections to Saudi Arabia and Saudi sponsorship of Islamic fundamentalist terrorism. John O'Neill was then, after leaving the FBI, killed in the World Trade Center attacks of September 11th, and his posthumous words were printed in the book Bin Laden, La Vérité Interdite. The following article, which I'm not going to read, it's all in French, and rather than translating it and taking the time to read it in French, I'm just going to basically give you the thrust of what is discussed here. This was published in Le Temps, And it's available on their website, www.letemps.ch. That's L-E-T-E-M-P-S, one word. This article is by Yves Petignat, P-E-T-I-G-N-A-T. It was printed on January 26th of 2002. The headline is, Yeslam Bin Laden bloque la vente en Suisse du livre La Vérité Interdite. It's Dateline Geneva. And what the book discusses is the fact that Yaslam bin Laden maintained, and his counsel maintained, that the book is defamatory to his reputation because this book maintains that Yaslam bin Laden, or implies that Yaslam bin Laden and the Saudi investment company, or SECO, were involved in the terrorist activities of his brother, and because of that, his attorneys were able to force the publisher of this, De Noël, to effect some substantive changes in the particular book. Jean-Charles Brizard, one of the co-authors of the book, maintained that the book was this blocking of the publication and forced editing and interdiction of some of the book, some of the passages, was a significant restriction on freedom of the press. So I would note that, again, in this article from Le Temps, the aforementioned Yaslam bin Laden has blocked the publication of a book that implicated his activities with those of, or that implied that he was involved with his brother's terrorist activities, or his half-brother's terrorist activities. Note again the enormous wealth of the bin Laden family, and that some of the putative power of wealth in the civic courts is being used to help block some of the discussion of some of the allegations of the involvement of Yaslam bin Laden. One of the things that we're going to be focusing on in the rest of the broadcast, and that concerns some of the petrodollar connections, because of the tremendous wealth that has been flowing to the Middle East, and in particular to Saudi Arabia, where the Islamo-fascist extreme Wahhabi sect holds sway. Tremendous power has been lent not only to Wahhabism, which in many ways has corrupted the Islamic faith in a very violent direction, but in turn, the tremendous wealth of Saudi Arabia has been recycled not only into very powerful corporate connections, which in turn have helped to limit the investigation into the events of September 11th, but as we will see later in the program, this tremendous oil wealth is also leading to the corruption of American academic institutions and also of the changing of public opinion in an anti-Semitic, pro-Wahhabi fashion. And that has had some very significant influence in the public's perceptions of the tragic events now unfolding in the Middle East. Research credit on the following goes to Dave White, our European researcher and translator, who got the following article from L'Espresso of November 1st of 2001. This article is by Francesco Bonazzi. It's headlined, The U.S. President's Dangerous Connections. This alludes to James R. Bath, who was the North American business representative for Salem bin Laden, who was apparently involved in some of the October surprise activities. Salem bin Laden died under strained circumstances in a plane crash in 1988. And this discusses the James R. Bath connection to George Bush Jr., and in turn, the connection of George Bush Jr. to Arbusto Energy and Harkin Energy, and to some of the critical financial institutions that were involved with financing those. The article reads, quote, Money is the lifeblood of terrorism. Today, we ask the world to suspend its financing, said George W. Bush on September 24th, when he announced that the United States had frozen the assets of 27 companies suspected of pumping money into Islamic terrorist networks. But money is also the nourishment of every entrepreneur. And when it is in short supply, one must look for fresh, new sources of finance. The current U.S. president followed in the footsteps of his father. He devoted himself to the search for oil and new financiers. And he unknowingly countenanced personages linked to Saudi money men and Osama bin Laden. In 1976, when George Bush Sr. was appointed to head the CIA, he quickly sold a large number of the clandestine services aircraft to a private company. That company was Skyway, formed by James Bath, a Texan who had been in the military reserve with George Bush Jr. During this period, Bath became the U.S. representative of Saudi millionaire Salem bin Laden, one of Osama bin Laden's brothers. In 1977, Bath gained management control of the Port of Houston, and Bush Jr. founded Arbusto Energy. Within 12 months, Arbusto needed money, so Bath offered the company $50 million. In an embarrassing bulletin issued shortly after the September 11th attacks, the White House tried to say that Bath had invested his own money in the company. Arbusto's financial situation worsened, and in 1986, after a series of mergers, it became Harkin Energy. Among its shareholders and board of directors, George Bush Jr. In the space of a year, Harkin needed money. To save it from bankruptcy, Saudi banker Khalid bin Mahfouz injected $25 million into the company. By the way, bin Mahfouz is being investigated in connection with Al-Taqwa and September 11th. Continuing. By the way, he was also represented by James R. Bath in North America. The transaction was negotiated in great secrecy in Geneva. The money arrived from the Union Banque Suisse and the Bank of Commerce and Credit International, whose principal shareholder was bin Mahfouz. At the end of the 80s, BCCI collapsed, leaving a $10 billion hole. BCCI had laundered money for CIA operations, including support for the Afghan resistance. As for bin Mahfouz, he was not just BCCI's principal shareholder. He also controls Saudi Arabia's largest bank, the Saudi National Commercial Bank, and has been married to a sister of Osama bin Laden. Bin Laden, in turn, counts among his wives a sister of bin Mahfouz. In 1999, the terrorist links of bin Mahfouz were proven, and today he is under arrest in Saudi Arabia. Will any government ever ask for his extradition? Don't bet on it, says Dave Emery. We're going to be continuing with the discussion not only of bin Mahfouz and Salem bin Laden and James R. Bath, but some of the petrodollar connections to the events in and around September 11th. Those have been one of the things that has led to an institutional cover-up of much of what has gone on. The various programs that I've recorded over the years are available from a tape and CD duplication service called Spitfire. You can visit their website, equipped with real audio, at www.spitfirelist.com. In the For the Record section of the Spitfire website, there are detailed and annotated descriptions of the various programs that are available, and the programs about the September 11th event are being reformatted, and the new, easier-to-read reformatted descriptions should be up within a relatively short period of time, probably by the time people hear this program. There are links in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM. There are programs, more recent broadcasts, streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery, and there are other broadcasts available for download only on a longer URL. Again, go to www.spitfirelist.com, and in the For the Record section, there are links to both WFMU websites. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 355, The Ties That Bind Part 3, being recorded on April 14th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.